The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Well, there's another school shooting. It happened day before yesterday. We wanted to see if anybody was covering it. Of course not. Another chance for the progressive left to further their gun control narrative, to further inflame the national dialogue, to continue a debate that ended in 1791. So here's the thing. This happened in St. Mary's County in Maryland, but it doesn't fit the narrative. That's why you didn't see it anywhere. 17-year-old started firing his pistol. Now here's a shooting that wouldn't have been stopped. You ban all the ARs. He had a pistol. He wounded a little girl and a 14-year-old boy. Within 1 minute, a school resource officer, Deputy Blaine Gaskill, returned the fire. And then the gunfight was over. It's clear cut. This is a good guy with a gun shot a bad guy with a gun. It's that easy. Yet, already, mainstream media downplayed the incident. They first were saying things like, well, maybe the kid shot himself. We can't know for sure that the armed resource officer did any good. We can't say that for sure. That's a quote. What? Why is this story better if the kid shot himself? The only reason why this would be better is if you had an agenda to take all the guns. Now, this shooting is different. That's what the left will say. This time, the shooter used a handgun, which are strictly regulated in Maryland. Wait. Handguns are? Or ARs are? Or all guns are? Which is it? The strict regulations, probably forced him to grab a handgun instead of an AR. Therefore, gun control is necessary, they will say. But here's the deal. In close quarters, handgun is just as lethal as any other gun. Close quarters, a handgun is probably more so. And it's easily concealed. The shooter in the Virginia Tech massacre, which stands as the deadliest school shooting in U.S. history, he didn't use an AR. Isn't that weird? He used a .22 Walther P-22. And a Glock 19, two pistols. That's what he used. Of course, the fact that an armed guard effectively stopped the school shooter and possibly prevented further violence proves the lethality of the gun is not the issue. The whole point of having a gun is that it is lethal. The issue concerns the mental instability of the teenage boy who is holding the gun, not the gun. But that would challenge David Hogg and his narrative. You know, he's been doing the rounds for the last month. The media prefers to ignore what Deputy Blaine Gaskill did. He's the guy who went in and stopped this guy. And the media continues to ignore what the sheriff, the deputy, and now the deputy this week that was asleep at the job at Parkland. They refuse to look at that deputy and the one that just stopped this shooter, this attempted murderer in Maryland. Is anybody else tired of just looking over the facts? Because the deputy in Maryland, Blaine Gaskill, he wasn't just armed. He really would have been part of what the founders would call a well-regulated militia.
It's Thursday, March 22nd. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We're live from Los Angeles today, where there were more rules in the parking lot. There were signs I didn't even understand in the parking lot of where you could park and where you couldn't park, and the fines that were... What was it, Tim? A low-clearance or high-clearance vehicle? High-clearance vehicle. What the hell is a high-clearance vehicle? I'm not sure what that is.
One that requires a high clearance?
Oh, okay.
No?
I don't know. It looked exactly the same as the other parking space on the other side that didn't say that.
Well, it could be low-flying birds.
I'm not sure what it is, but a high-clearance vehicle, and there's a $250 fine for that one. And then the rows and rows and rows of compact cars, which, you know, allows you to, you know, park closer to the building. Oh, my gosh. I mean, within hours of being in California over Texas, I was losing my mind. I don't know how people live here. We've got a lot of stories from California today. We are going to be talking to the teacher that lost her job, or thought she was losing her job. She was put on administrative leave. She found out through the media. She's watching television. She's like, I've been put on administrative leave. She was put on administrative leave because in her history, in context, in today's world class, she's mentioned to her class, so you have this walkout for 17 days, and it's about the Constitution. It's about the Second Amendment. Would our school allow somebody to have a walkout for 17 minutes, and would they support it and celebrate it if it was pro-life, which is also a constitutional question? She was suspended, put on administrative leave, because her students and all of their past students rose up in the community and said, excuse me, this isn't right. The school backed down. But one of her students is now saying, I'm going to ask for a 17-minute walkout that is pro-life. Let's see if the school is consistent on their constitutional feelings. We have the student on with us in about 90 minutes as well.
You're really pessimistic, and that's your problem. You know, yeah. I mean, I know we can all get there occasionally, but I think every once in a while an event comes along that proves your pessimism incorrect, and you have to maybe view the world in a new way.
Okay, like
I think best example recently would be the budget.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I was skeptical. I got to say it. I was skeptical. You know, yeah. I went in thinking, you know, I don't know. I don't think Washington's going to get their spending under control.
Right. I know what you were thinking, that there's no difference between Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer. That's what you were thinking.
I was thinking that. I was thinking, you know, that the spending would just continue to go on. I was thinking, I had this weird impression they wouldn't give them enough time to read the bill.
Right.
I had this impression that getting control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency would result in not much of a change. But I was obviously proven wrong.
Okay, so they've just put together the budget. It's 2,332 pages. It's going to allocate $1.3 trillion of federal funding over the next 2 years, from everything from the military to disease prevention to job training programs, yada, yada, yada. And it was done by the big four congressional leaders, Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, Paul Ryan, and Nancy Pelosi. And then given a few hours, you know, for everybody in Congress to be able to read that 232 page bill. And then they had a vote on it. Now, Stu's been skeptical, but he's such a cynic. Yeah, here's some of the things that are in there that I think are great.
Well, big conservative priorities. We've been talking about them for a long time. We got to get these things done. We got to get more funding for the IRS.
Right.
How long have we demanded? The IRS needs more money. It needs more. It needs a couple hundred million dollars more.
Okay,
And we've been pounding that, and then here it is in the bill. Really excited about that.
Well, how about this one? $1.2 billion for the Federal Railroad Administration.
Oh, huge.
Okay,
huge.
So I mean I've been saying, you know, hey, we need more bureaucrats on the railroad system. You know, we need a bigger administration. What we need is an increase in the budget of $1.2 billion for the administration of the railroads.
And that's really good. That's really good. I was also, and we've talked about this dozens of times, I don't mean to bore the audience, but we said, make sure that Planned Parenthood and Sanctuary Cities get their money. And they are getting it in this bill. So I feel really good about that.
That's why we voted for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. That's why we voted. You know, how many times have we said, we need high-speed internet?
Oh, yeah, for rural areas.
Rural areas, and I as a mother... Crowd. I need high-speed internet. The good news is $600 million for high-speed internet.
Oh, thrilled about that. And I'm very excited as well. Now, I will say, not everything us conservatives wanted got in the bill.
Like?
The president has issued... Now, he backs the bill, but he does have some reservations. For example, the Democrats would not put DACA in the bill.
Those damn Democrats.
The Democrats, they just don't listen.
Oh, my
Democrats,
gosh.
How many times have we said we want illegal immigrants to be given legal status and a pathway to citizenship? We demand it, and Democrats keep shutting us down when we go for that. I'm sick of it.
The president's mad.
And he's pushed back on that, which is working out. I'm glad he's doing that.
Yeah,
but
too.
It did not make it in the bill, so you can't be. It's not all celebration this morning.
Well, there is, but let me stop being such a cynic. Let me look at the bright side. Mm-hmm. The president asked for about $600 million more for the census, and we love the census. Remember when the census came out?
Mm-hmm.
Remember under Barack Obama? And remember how all of the conservatives were just clamoring and saying, hey, wait a minute, do I have to answer all of these questions? What do you mean I go to jail if I don't tell you everything about my household? Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he asked for $600 million increase, and he got it. Times two, Stu.
Nice.
Times two.
Double it up.
Double the amount of money he asked for.
Double the success.
Right.
Now, some people will look at some of this stuff and say, I'm not 100% sure that's the best idea. But I can tell you this. You know what the left wanted. They wanted big-time funding for Acorn. Remember Acorn?
Yeah.
We in the bill, Section 522 says none of the funds under this act can be provided to ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, which is great because a lot of people thought, you know, given that it went out of business 8 years ago, that they might at any time get more funding, and this guarantees they won't.
Guarantees. They took care of that problem that was happening in 2008. By 2010, they had all changed names from ACORN. But here they are, 8 years later, ensuring that business, which is no longer in business, doesn't get funded.
That's right. And if there's anything, Glenn, that we wanted to do as conservatives here with this bill, and it's about setting a precedent.
Uh-huh.
It's about breaking new ground.
Uh-huh.
And it's about setting new records.
Uh-huh.
And here we go, looking at this bill that was agreed upon between Democrats, Republicans, and the president, and it's going to be voted on without really full time to read it, but some of it you can kind of check out. Maybe you could skim.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing is this provides more discretionary funding for our government than any year during the Obama administration.
Oh, thank goodness.
That's what we were asking for.
I was saying to myself, the government doesn't have enough of our tax dollars.
Right. They need more.
They need more.
They
and discretionary
more.
So they can spend it any way they want.
Well, that's the thing. This isn't mandatory coming down from one of the programs that it was already passed by law because those things increase, and there's nothing much you can do about those things unless you pass the law.
The cupboards are bare.
Of course. Here, though, this is discretionary spending, and it's good to see that with a Republican Congress, a Republican House, Senate, and presidency, that we are spending more money than any year of the Obama administration. I'm thrilled. I don't know about you. I'm thrilled.
Well, hang on just a second. Let me tell you this, Stu. You're
going to
be
winning.
Remember, this is a 2-year budget.
Oh,
so
that's great.
It's happening 2 years in a row.
All about setting new records.
Listen, remember that? Remember the border wall? Did he get that passed?
Oh, you're going to be very happy.
Okay.
Now, of course, you might remember that we don't need any money for it.
We don't need any money.
It would be paid for by Mexico.
Right.
But some people were skeptical of that claim. And here we find out that we got $1.6 billion to start the war on the wall on the southern border.
Wow.
Now, when you read the details, it doesn't actually say any of it can be applied to the wall.
I don't know. What do you mean?
Does that explain it?
Wait a minute. Hang on just a second. I'm reading it right here, and it's very clear. It cannot be used for the wall on the border. However, they can build fencing similar to what exists now.
Great.
Right.
That's
additionally
great.
The funding cannot be used to hire agents, you know, from immigration and customs enforcement, ICE, who are not stationed on the border. So the money can't be used for additional agents around the country, And it specifically cannot be used to build a wall, but they can put a fence up. And hopefully it's a nice, you know, I don't know if it's chain link. I would like to get one of those chain link fences where, you know, they put the little slats in between it so you can't really see in, because that will confuse the illegal aliens. They won't know, you know, especially if it's camouflage. They won't know. Should I climb over it or under it? Is it even a fence? I don't know.
Who knows?
So,
well, it just is a huge success.
I think success. Is where we would big, put big, this. Big. In fact, we're going to talk to one of our congressmen coming up in just a few minutes about this huge success of the budget. And that's what we get for having a Republican in the House, in the Senate, and the White House. This is what you get when you get all three. It's fantastic. Sarah, who's our sponsor this half hour? Liberty Safe. I love Liberty Safe. Liberty Safe is the organization that we have been doing business with for I don't even know how long it's been. Long time. And they were just building. I can't remember how many safes they were building at the very beginning. It was like 20 a day. It's now hundreds. They are the ones that are building the safes for all of the Cabela's. And so when you see a Cabela's safe, it now says, you know, for Cabela's by Liberty. It's a Liberty safe. They are the best built safes on the planet, and they are all built here in America. Now, Liberty safe, the biggest complaint on a Liberty, and there's always a complaint because somebody's always pissed about something. The number one complaint, I should have bought a bigger one. And I have to tell you, that is absolutely true. We have seen these things picked up by a tornado and dropped a couple of blocks away. We have seen a Liberty safe in a fire here in California that everything burnt down except the chimney and the Liberty safe. Opened it up and everything's in it. Now Liberty is offering for $20 a month, safes as low as $20 a month. Nothing like owning a Liberty safe. Now with 12 months interest-free payments or as low as $20 a month on approved credit, you need to act now. The deal ends March 26. Every home needs a Liberty safe. Your valuables are always protected with a Liberty safe. LibertySafe.com. Go there now. LibertySafe.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
I don't know about you, but I am thrilled, no, sincerely thrilled, that we have finally the GOP in charge of the House, the Senate, and the White House, because it allows us to get a budget like we're getting now, which, you know, is higher discretion spending and more spending than any time during the Obama administration.
And this is, I mean, honestly, partially our fault. We continually said, you know, I don't think you're going to get a good deal if you start working with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. We kept saying, we discouraged that.
We got to stop
here
being
we are
sarcastic.
Here we are being proven so wrong.
Oh my gosh, this is so, Mo Brooks is going to be on with us here in a second. I'm guessing he's not happy with the budget.
Really?
Yeah.
Mo doesn't tend to... to like extra spending.
No.
In fact, a lot of Freedom Caucus types are pushing back against this. You know, Thomas Massie yesterday was doing it. You know, Justin Amash. And it's not even just...
Mike Lee was beside himself.
Mike Lee.
He was beside himself.
It's not just all the extra spending and all the nonsense that we could point out, because there's always some of it. This is worse, again, than any other budget. So, I mean, I don't know how you justify that and get excited about it. But, I mean...
This is worse. Even, so, you know, this is worse than the Turtle Tuttle budget.
Yeah, and by considerable amounts. The issue, I guess, in addition to that, is the way they're doing this. It was drawn up behind closed doors. No one had any hand. No one knew it was coming. It's a 2,232-page bill that they're going to have less than 24 hours to read and vote on. You know, this is all nonsense that we've argued about and tried to get rid of for all this time. You get control of everything, and you still can't stop this craziness.
You know what really, bothers me? I mean, well, all of it, but the IRS is such a slap in the face of all of the Republican voters, a slap in the face by the Republicans to the Republicans. We all know that the IRS harassed and used their power and were out of control. And what did they do? They rewarded them. They rewarded them. They increased the budget for IRS agents. Are they out of their mind? No, they're not. They know exactly what they're doing. They're increasing their control.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. There's a story we have to get to today. I'm just going to read the headline. Florida man dressed in a bull costume accused of trying to burn down a house using Ragu spaghetti sauce. I have to get to that story today. Also, an Alabama state rep said we should not arm teachers because there are ladies. I think he said most women are scared of guns and they don't want to carry a gun. So I'm waiting for the women's movement to come out and say, how dare you say that women can't carry a gun? It's going to be fun to watch that. Meanwhile, we have Mo Brooks. He's one of the good guys in the House. Representative Mo Brooks from Alabama. He's introduced End the Federal Shutdown Act. Mo, welcome to the program. How are you feeling about that great Republican budget?
Well, let me kind of toss it back at you, Glenn. As the father of the Tea Party and the 2010 revolution, do you kind of feel like we're in George Orwell's Animal Farm?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we are living in such a upside-down world. The Republicans that were put into Congress by voters who were being oppressed and targeted by the IRS just had their representatives. Those guys just went and voted for more money for the IRS agents. It's crazy.
Everything is turned upside down. One of the reasons that we've got the End the Government Shutdown Act is to try to minimize the power plays that take place with must-pass legislation. We have a bill that's 2,000 pages long. I have little idea what's in it. You know, I'm reading media reports as quickly as I can, talking to other congressmen as much as I can to try to ascertain it. But when it's over 2,000 pages long, over $1.3 trillion being spent, and you have what it was introduced last night, you know, I have to have sleep sometime during the night. This is a horrible way to do business, and it pushes us up against a deadline where the threat is if you don't do what we tell you to do, and the special interest groups, of course, are the ones that are really the puppeteers running the show. If you don't do what we tell you you need to do, then there's going to be a government shutdown. It's going to be all your fault. Well, the End the Government Shutdown Act that I've introduced would eliminate that PowerPoint that the special interest groups are able to use against us congressmen and senators by saying, okay, if we fail to meet a deadline, the government does not shut down. It continues to operate at the same spending levels that it operated on the day before and the month before and the year before. And it just continues that until such time as Congress gets its act together and passes a piece of legislation that spends either more or less money or reprioritizes the money being spent. So it's a great piece of legislation. Unfortunately, since it's a great piece of legislation, that makes it much less likely that it would get through this Congress.
So let me ask you this. Is it that they have to pass a continuing resolution or an actual budget?
Well, with my legislation, it's just automatic. The funding continues at prior spending levels until such time as Congress reprioritizes either with a continuing resolution, an omnibus, or what I'd really prefer would be the honest-to-goodness appropriation bills that we work on for many months but don't ever seem to pass. Most people would refer to those appropriation bills as a budget, although in Washington, in the upside-down world we're in, the word budget doesn't mean what it means everywhere else in the United States. In Washington, a budget doesn't spend any money. It's just the game plan. It's an outline of what you hope will happen. It's the appropriation bills, the continuing resolutions, and the omnibus bills that actually spend money, that allocate it to particular programs or departments for them to then spend.
Mo, you know, we have been afraid. Half the country was afraid of an out-of-control dictatorship with too much power under Obama, that we could easily slide into that. Now the other half of the country is afraid that we could easily slide into dictatorship under Donald Trump. I contend we have a dictatorship when it comes to the budget, which is really what the federal government is. It's a four-person dictatorship. It is Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell, and Paul Ryan.
That is pretty much it. And to a large degree, those four delegate a lot of this homework, negotiating, to staffers. Unfortunately, President Trump, his wishes with respect to our spending priorities, was his wishes weren't respected very much at all, particularly by Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, but to a lesser degree by Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. I mean, if you're a Democrat, this is the bill you want, okay? It's a great bill for Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. It's a horrible bill for the American people, because it increases the likelihood of America suffering a very dangerous and debilitating insolvency and bankruptcy. And I hate to mention that so bluntly, because a lot of people are startled by it, and they think I'm speaking hyperbole, but I'm not. We're looking at a trillion-dollar deficit within the next 12 to 15 months, and the estimates that I'm getting from, say, the Bipartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget has concluded that the deficits will be $2.4 trillion a year, within 10 years. And we're talking about a spending bill. Our entire discretionary spending bill is $1.3 trillion. And we're looking at deficits of $2.4 trillion in a decade. It's horrific what this Congress, this White House, and past Congresses and White Houses have done to America's future with what is now a $21 trillion debt level that is projected to be at $38 trillion in 10 years if we keep doing what we're irresponsibly doing.
That's $30 trillion more than when everyone was yelling at George W. Bush, saying that we are out of control, spending is out of control, and we're going to go bankrupt. That'll be a $30 trillion increase in our debt. And does anyone in Washington really care, except for a handful of you guys?
There are maybe 10 or 20% of the members of the United States Senate and the United States Congress who understand it and care enough to have the backbone to do something about it.
Unfortunately,
when we have votes, 10 to 20% doesn't win.
Is it bipartisan at all?
I don't know of any Democrats that I can say are financially responsible. There might be one or two, okay? I just don't know it. They haven't been put in the position where they've had to make that really hard decision. Certainly, they lead the spending charge, but because so many Republicans right now are concerned about the 2018 elections, it looks like they're just copycat Democrats. I mean, let's face it. This spending bill that passed in February and the one that we're about to pass right now, it's a debt junkie's wildest dream. It's financial insanity. I don't have words that adequately describe how bad it is or how horrific it's going to be for the United States of America long-term if we go into an insolvency and bankruptcy. And I could give some examples of what has happened in other places that have defaulted on their credit obligations. If you won't, it'll scare the daylights out of your listeners, though.
Mo, please do, but start here. Because the argument will be, oh, that's irresponsible. Mo Brooks going on and saying that we'll become insolvent. We'll never go bankrupt. We can't go bankrupt. We can always print more money.
Okay, well, let me give some examples. And there's some truth to the statement that we can print more money, but in real dollar terms, you're still bankrupt, okay? All you've done is handed out different pieces of cash with different numbers on them, but that doesn't mean you're not bankrupt. And I'll use Venezuela as an example. Their inflation rate in 2017 was roughly 4,000%. Their adult population age bracket roughly 20 to 65 in 2017, because of the collapsing economy that's associated with those kind of high interest rates caused by just printing more money, okay? That population segment, adult population, Venezuela, had an average weight loss last year of 24 pounds per person. because they can't get the food and the calories to sustain their body weight. That's what happens when an economy collapses because the central government can't make their ends meet. Or you could look at Greece. And I'm trying to get us to learn from what other countries have gone through rather than repeating their mistakes. Greece has been basically in default at least three different times in the last 6 or 7 years. Now, fortunately for them, the European community has bailed them out. So they're in better shape than America would be because no one's going to bail out America. Mm-mm. But their unemployment rate right now approximates our worst periods during the Great Depression, and that's after they've been bailed out three different times. So when you have a central government that is defaulting on loans, it has an adverse effect on the economy and the lives of the people who are there. Puerto Rico defaulted a year or two ago on $72, $73 billion in debt. So when the hurricane came, and, you know, being a Caribbean island, hurricanes do come, they were wholly unprepared. Their infrastructure was not hardened. Their utilities fell apart. They're in a shambles. And but for the rescue effort by the United States of America, a lot of Puerto Ricans would have died by now from the hardship associated with their government being insolvent and not having a depot spread out throughout the island with drinkable water and food, not having shelters that you could weather the storm in, not having a hardened utility system that wouldn't be so destroyed, electricity, running water to the extent they've got sewer. These are all things associated with an insolvency and bankruptcy with one huge difference. If the United States follows these paths, and I hope we won't, but it looks like we're gonna, but if America follows that path, think of the adverse effect that has on our United States military when we can no longer afford to pay for it, and what kind of adventurism there may be around the world and the deaths that would ensue as a result because of the United States of America no longer being able to help preserve the peace.
You know, I have to tell you, Mo, if I may scare the hell out of you, I take that a step further. In 2008, when we were bailing everybody out, the president of China, bought some more of our treasuries and said to us, do not dishonor our investment. They are investors in us. When we go down like Venezuela, the entire world goes down and everyone will blame us. And anyone who has the ability to come claim some of our assets, they will claim our assets. And the entire world will point the finger to Americans and say, it's your fault that we're starving because you were greedy and fat and you wanted it all. And if you don't think that the politicians all over the world will tell their people that and blame it on the average American and we will be the pariahs of the world, you don't know who politicians are because they always look for a boogeyman so they're not blamed.
It's worse. There is a lot of truth to that statement. And let me also talk about history for a moment. Great Depression. What happened during the Great Depression? And that's where America's headed if we go insolvent. We don't pay our bills. America during the Great Depression had to reduce our military capability. What happened as a result of that? Japan actually thought they could win a war with us, so they initiated one at Pearl Harbor. And that was in the day before there were nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction. Okay? Now, fast forward to today. What enemy of ours or geopolitical foe of ours might be tempted to do something they never would be tempted to today if the United States does not have the military capability to strike back. If we repeat the mistakes of the Great Depression of the 1930s that resulted in 50 to 60 million people losing their lives around the planet with World War II.
You don't have to really imagine that. Look what Russia is doing to us and to the UK because they know we don't have the political will. We add to that, you don't have the economic might to do it, and you're toast. We're talking to Congressman Mo Brooks from Alabama. The End Federal Shutdown Act is his legislation. Any chance of this even being brought to the floor, and how can people help you, Mo?
There is a chance if the American people will rise up, understand the risk associated with the structure that is in place that has resulted in large part with us looking at a $1 trillion deficit in the next year and a half, and ultimately that $37 trillion debt and insolvency and bankruptcy, if the American people will call their senators and their representatives and demand that their congressmen and senators end this perpetual shutdown risk that gives leverage to the special interest groups that provide the money that fund the elections, okay? But the threat of a government shutdown is what results in us getting a 2,000-page bill last night that nobody has read, that the American people are going to have no chance to comment to their congressmen and senators on, that results in really bad things happening that the American people don't want.
Mo Brooks,
leverage point.
Thank you very much for your hard work. This is the End the Federal Shutdown Bill. Call Congress, call your senator, and demand that they end the federal shutdowns with this shutdown act. Thank you very much, Mo Brooks. I want to tell you about American financing. Did you see that the Fed came out and raised the interest rate again yesterday? Even though they came out and said, oh, we were wrong about our GDP growth. We thought it was going to be 5.8. I think it's 1.7. This is not the time to be, you know, raising interest rates, but they're doing it. What does that mean for you? If you have an adjustable mortgage, your rates are going to go up. If you're looking to buy a house, your rates are going to go up. You need to lock in a mortgage now. If you're looking to buy or sell your house, now is the time to do it. If you're looking to take your debt and consolidate it, now is the time to do it. Call the salary-based mortgage consultants. Please do this today. American Financing, 866-750-6551, 866-750-6551, or AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
So the good news is Stu has done his research. He's found some fiscal responsibility in the new GOP budget.
Getting rid of the pork, the new $1.3 trillion congressional spending plan prohibits members of Congress from spending more than $1,000 a month on car leases. So that means you can get the 2 Series, the 3 Series, the 4 Series, and the 5 Series, but you cannot get a BMW 6 Series. You can't even do it.
Wow, it's they're amazing. Holding it down. holding it down.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
All right. Everybody, you need to pull out your neo-Marxist playbook now. Your postmodernism playbook, where we all can learn and sing from the hymnal that there is no objective truth, nor is there any objective reality. Just because you believe that's reality doesn't make it reality. There is no such thing as objective reality. We all can create our own reality. Can I get an amen? Campus feminism now has added a new rule. Mount Holyoke College in Mass has just sent out a guide advising its professors to refrain from using the word women when describing women. Instead, they say, when referring to students who are women, the professors have now been instructed to use the word students because it is more gender exclusive. I thought we were supposed to be inclusive. Anyway, the rest of this article doesn't make sense. This is a problem at this particular university because this happens to be an all-women's university. I'm sorry. Sorry. An all-student university. Wait. Aren't all universities all-student universities? No. There are those universities that are students and construction workers, I think, and cab driver universities. Anyway, This is a part of an initiative to foster intersectionality. A complete non-judgmental acceptance of women because, in their words, traditional binaries around who counts as a man or a woman are being challenged by those whose gender identity doesn't conform to their biology. Remember, there is no reality and there is no truth. You could not make this stuff up. So the answer, this I'm gonna read the question and the answer from the school. Who is female or identifies as a woman? That's the question. Who is female or identifies as a woman? In other words, if gender identity doesn't conform to biology, who is allowed to apply at a, excuse this, I don't mean to be a trigger here, but who is going to apply to a woman's only university? So who can apply? Okay, this is the actual answer. The following academically qualified students can apply for admission consideration. Biologically born female that identifies as a woman. A biologically born female that identifies as a man. Okay, now this is a women's only college, but if you're a biologically born female and you identify as a man, you can go. A biologically born female that identifies as other, they, or Z. Biologically born female does not identify as either a woman or a man. A biologically born male that identifies as a woman. A biologically born male that identifies as other, they, or Z. When other or they identity includes a woman. Biologically born both male and female, intersex, that identifies as a woman. The following academically qualified students cannot apply for admission consideration, and that is biologically born male identifies as a man. This is neo-Marxism and postmodernism at its finest. And you know it's good. I mean, at least by their standards, because it makes absolutely no sense to any logical person, no matter how you define yourself.
It's Thursday, March 22nd. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Don't go anywhere, because I have to share this story with you, because if you think that story was weird, going to give you the headline. Florida men, one dressed in a bull costume, accused of trying to burn down house using Ragu spaghetti sauce. This story is one for the record books, coming up in just a second. Yesterday, we caught up with, you remember the teacher that last week was put on administrative leave because she dare ask the question in her history in context class? You know, you're being encouraged to stand up and have your voice heard on the Second Amendment, which is a constitutional right. And the students are all going to gather for 17 minutes in the courtyard. This daring teacher then said, "Hey, do you think that the school would support you here in California if you were organizing something that was pro-life?" Well, that upset a couple of students and one parent, and they called, and she was put on administrative leave. Thank goodness her community of students and past students all rose up to defend her because they quickly reversed that. But now one of the students, Brandon Gillespie, is taking that challenge and saying, "I wonder what would happen in school if we did start a pro-life walkout in a California school." The high school is Rockland High School, and Brandon is the student. Brandon Gillespie, he joins us now, part of the hashtag Life campaign. Brandon, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. So now, tell me the story. You were in the class when your history teacher asked this question.
Yeah. So basically, Miss Benzel was just simply asking a question. If would the school district allow a walkout for something like abortion? And that's all, the only question she asked us. And she just wanted us to go do our own research and not just stick with the crowd. She wanted us to do our own research about the walkout last week to see if it was really something that we wanted to take part in.
And she did. She was not using this as a political tool. She, I mean, this fits in her class, does it not? History in context?
Yeah, yes, it does. Yeah, I mean, it's history class. Yeah, of course it fits.
Right, and it's an AP course. So this is basically a college course in a high school program, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
All right, so you heard that, and you saw her, be kicked out of school for a couple of days. A, how did you feel about that? Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I mean, I was really upset. In the first place, I was really upset that the school district even allowed a protest on the Second Amendment. But, yeah, when this happened to Ms. Benzel, I mean, it would just really upset me, and it made me want to go out and take a stand.
Okay, so why did it upset you that they allowed a protest of the Second Amendment?
Well, I personally don't think that they should allow political protests or beliefs in our schools. However, since they were masking this walkout last Wednesday, they were masking it and saying that it was to honor the victims of the Parkland shooting. And mm-hmm. I would not have had a problem with that, but they were masking it, and it was really about protesting the Second Amendment.
And why do you say that it was a mask? What led you to believe that?
Because that's just what it was advertised as was, we're going to do it for 17 minutes to honor the victims of the Parkland shooting. However, if you went on like the Women's March website, all it said was it's for gun control and more gun control.
Okay. And so you have decided to see if you could stage a walkout for a constitutional right. How do you think that's going to go, especially since they will claim that this was just a memorial for those killed at Parkland?
Yeah, exactly. So so tomorrow I actually have a meeting with my school principal, and I'm just going to tell him that I'm trying to organize a pro-life walkout at our school, and it's going to be to commemorate the lives of the millions of prematurely killed children who fell victim to abortions.
And what do you expect them to say?
Well, I'm really not sure. That's why I'm really intrigued to see what happens tomorrow. I would really hope that, they would allow it to happen, but if they don't allow, my walkout to take place, it'll be blatant evidence of the double standard that Ms. Benzel had warned us of in class.
Have you role played this? I mean, I'm sure your principal is, he's aware of what you're going to do and what you're going to ask. So he's going to be loaded. Have you role played this?
Yeah, I've been writing down talking points and, things. So I think I'm ready to, meet with him tomorrow.
And what is your strongest point?
I think my strongest point would be that they allowed the first walkout and they were masking it to be only about honoring the lives. So that's exactly what I'm doing is I'm having a walkout to honor and commemorate.
Well, now, Brandon, hang on just a second. You're saying that you're assuming that this was a mask. We really were looking at those fellow students at another school, and we really were. Now, you're saying to me that you're just trying to make this into political a political statement, and you're using those children as a mask when we deny that we use that as a mask. That's your perception.
No, absolutely not. This my walkout is purely to honor and commemorate the lives
of those 60 million children.
Yes, of the millions of children.
So, Brandon, but if we allow this, I mean, then we're just going to be a nonstop. We'll never be in class.
Yes, exactly. That's why I don't think that they should have allowed the first one. But now that they allowed the first one, they must allow more.
Okay, Brandon, I hope you do your homework and you know, I love the fact that people of your age are standing up and that you are getting involved in things. But if I may, just don't treat those who disagree with you like the Parkland students are treating the people that disagree with them. I think they're shameful. Always remain polite and respectful, and know that you'll gather more support if you are honest and open and really try to play by the rules and be fair to even those who disagree with you.
Yeah, I completely agree.
All right, so we'll check in probably Monday. I'd like to get a report from you on what the principal said. All right?
Okay. Good. All right, and also, so this walkout that I'm planning, I'm going to propose to my principal tomorrow that for the walkout to take place on Wednesday, April 11th at 10 o'clock in the morning, which is approximately 1 month after the gun control protest that took place last Wednesday. So I'm just trying to spread the word on social media using the hashtag life. So I'm just trying to spread the word not only locally, but across the nation.
Okay, so you would like others to participate in this?
Only if they want to, of course.
Yeah. Sure.
In solidarity, I will be walking out of this show every day at 10 a.m. to make sure that we support your protest.
Yeah, I will tell you, we will have somebody there to cover your protest for the Blaze. And while I'm here in Los Angeles, I'm going to stop by and say hi to a couple of friends that I know will also want to support this. And so you might be getting some other calls from some other famous people.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Brandon.
Wow. That was powerful. I think I'm going to walk out at 11 and 9
no,
and,
I don't.
And noon.
No, see, I didn't.
1 and 2
I
as
didn't
well.
Back
in solidarity
the,
with
no,
this
No, I didn't
protest.
Back the first protest, so.
Well, yeah, but I'm going to. You looked like you might have.
Well, no, but I didn't.
I'm going to walk out.
This teacher, we have a bizarre connection that I just found out about yesterday. A bizarre connection to this teacher. I can't believe we didn't know this. I can't believe she didn't say something. You won't believe it when we tell you about it. But before we get to that, I've got to tell you about the Florida man that's dressed as a bull and tried to set a house on fire using spaghetti sauce. We'll get into that when we come back. First, our sponsor is My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply has put together my my food storage. I have worked with them now for years, and it takes you a long time. And you know, you just don't say, "I'm going to just go buy a year's worth of food." Start small. That's the hardest thing, is to get started. That's why they have a special offer that ends this week: the 72-hour emergency food kit for $17.76. It's shipped for free. It is three-day food for your family, so breakfast, lunch, and dinner for one individual for $17.76. Now, you can get, I think it's maybe a limit of four on this. The food lasts for 25 years. It's shipped free. It's shipped discreetly to your home. It's 3 days of food, and that's the very least that you should have. That's the way you start. So if you don't have any food storage, or if you want to beef yours up, you take... charge of your own life and grab this offer now. It's good this week only. You'll be prepared at preparewithglenn.com. Call 1-800-200-7163. 800-200-7163. Go there now. This ends this week. 72-hour emergency food kit for $17.76. Preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Beck. All right, I mean, this may be one of the greatest stories of all time, mainly because the writer just assumes that we don't need any more information than this. Are you ready? Two Florida men. Got it so far, Stu?
Every one of these stories starts that way.
It does. It always in Florida. Mm-hmm. There's something weird about Florida. Two Florida men, one dressed in a bull costume, accused of trying to burn down a house using Ragu spaghetti sauce. That's the headline.
It's a long headline.
It is. Two Florida men accused of breaking into their ex-boyfriend's home.
So, quick question.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Did both of the men that broke in the boyfriend?
Don't have any idea. Okay. Two Florida men are accused of breaking into their ex-boyfriend's home and using Ragu spaghetti sauce to try to burn it down. Mm-hmm. Derek Irving, 36, John Silva, 28, were arrested on March 13th after allegedly breaking into the home and stealing several items, including a flat-screen television, a window air conditioning unit, and a vacuum.
In a vacuum?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a Bissell. You got to grab the Bissell. When you're robbing a house, you got to grab the vacuum.
And the window air conditioning
unit? And the window air conditioning unit. Okay. The victim called 911 after being alerted by security cameras of motion being detected in the house. He said a towel had been placed over one of the cameras. Arriving deputies saw a red SUV leaving the area and conducted a stop. The two men inside the vehicle, later identified as Irving and Silva, said they were just picking up some clothes from the home. The victim told the reporter that Irving was wearing a bull costume.
And there's no
explanation.
Like not a Chicago Bulls uniform.
No, it's a bull costume, and it doesn't say why. It doesn't.
There wasn't a follow up question on that one.
No. Just the victim told the reporter that Irving was wearing a bull costume. Period. The men initially denied the burglary, but when authorities went to the home, they found a burning pot of Ragu spaghetti sauce and a washcloth near it, which appeared to be an effort to start a fire. Now, when I start a fire, I think, let's put some spaghetti sauce on, hoping that that catches a flame and it jumps over to the washcloth that I have near it. The victim said, and I quote, "They were trying to make it look like I left the stove on, but who gets up at 2 a.m., I'm still quoting, and fixes Sketty.
Sketty,
S-K-E-I-T-T-I, Sketty. Who gets up at 2 o'clock and fixes Sketty?
I think it's a totally appropriate thing to do.
I think,
honestly.
Who gets up at 2 o'clock in the morning, dresses in a bull costume, and tries to fix Sketty? That's the real question.
Better question.
Yeah,
you're right.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
From Los Angeles, California, welcome to the program. We're glad you're here. Actually, I wish you were here and I wasn't, but we're in California today, which is just bizarre as hell. It really is. I stood in the parking lot today. I didn't understand the rules of the parking lot. There are more rules in this parking lot, this parking garage that I parked in at 4 o'clock this morning, than there are in my church. I don't know what all the rules mean. So I'm fully expecting that my car has been impounded by the state and probably sold off, in some sort of grab, and I'll fully support it. Whatever. I'm just glad I'm here. I'm just glad I just made it in here. California is a really interesting place. And what is fascinating to me is there is starting to be this movement here in California that people are starting to gather together and rise up and say, okay, all right. I'm not going to play that game. And one of the people that is doing it, we just talked to a student of Julianne Benzel. She's from Rockland High School. She's a history teacher. She was put on leave last week for questioning the walkouts, and not even questioning the walkouts, just saying, hey, would this be okay? And would the school react? Would it be right? And would the school react the same if this was a pro-life movement? That inspired one of the students to do this. And Julianne, we just got off the phone with him, and he's hoping that this turns into something that is a nationwide movement on pro-life.
Yes.
Now, is this, Julianne, is this something that you as a teacher, I mean, do you think this, is this what our students should be doing with their time in having walkout after walkout after walkout?
Well, you know what, I'm actually still grappling with that myself because just to backtrack for one sweet second, I asked kind of a hypothetical question in class, as you well know.
Yeah.
And on the day of the walkout, when I was placed on leave, Brandon sat in class and really processed through this and said, I wonder if there is a double standard. And that led him to, on his complete own volition, go make an appointment with our principal.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came back to school on Monday, much to my quite delight, he said, I made an appointment and I'm going to answer your question, Mrs. Benzel. And so at the moment, I can't necessarily answer your question because I have mixed feelings on whether public schools should be hotbeds of political activism.
Yeah.
But I am unbelievably impressed by his bravery and courage. And so I'm going to say a yes, no to your question.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know,
point. Yeah.
I don't think the schools, you walk out after school, you do this, show me your commitment when it's after class, because a lot of kids will just walk out because they just want to get out of school. And I don't know anybody who's sitting in front of me that might have done that during high school at all.
Or just a couple dozen times.
Yeah.
No more than that.
I didn't care. You didn't care what it was.
No, didn't.
You could have been, you know, I'm standing for Satan. Yeah, yeah, whatever. We're leaving class. And so you want to show commitment. Do it on a Saturday. Do it after school. Then I'll believe you're actually committed to it. However, that being said, we have to get to a point, perhaps, that if kids did this and went to their schools and said, we want to stand for life and we want to have a memorial for the 60 million children that have been killed through abortion, and we want to stand for life, those schools should do that. I doubt they will, but they should do that based on their reaction last week and their endorsement of that. Then after that, maybe all the schools can get together and go, you know, okay, let's just hold these after class.
Exactly. And that's exactly where I hope the narrative is going. I believe Brandon's whole point is not just our school administration, but I think he's putting a fleece out to the entire country. However each school reacted and allowed students to protest last Wednesday, March 14th, we're just asking for the same standard. And hold your school accountable in this particular protest. And then maybe after, you know, thousands upon thousands of students walk out on April 11th, maybe there'll be a national dialogue that public schools should not be the hotbeds of political activism. And maybe we should actually be, you know, in the classroom, instructing, having dialogue. But then, yeah, if you're really passionate about a particular subject, there is ample time on your own time to go be active.
So let me say this, too, just to prove the point. If you went to a school that did not support the walkouts, you should be going into the principal's office and saying, hey, we want to do a walkout on pro-life to see if they are biased the other way as well. It should be consistent. If you're going to do it, it's got to be consistent and not pick and choose the administration or the school district's, you know, pet project.
100%, Glenn, 100%. So if there, and again, I heard, you know, a gamut of different stories, like, you know, in some schools in Texas, they were not allowed. So I would say challenge them. You can't allow this pro-life, you know, protest. But how about the mayor of Baltimore? Is she going to use city funds to put kids on school buses and bring them to the Capitol next, you know, on Wednesday, April 11th to protest abortion? Let's challenge this.
If you would like to be, if you'd like to be involved, there is no there's no George Soros fund that is funding this. This is going to have to be actual grassroots. There's no Women's March. There's no Louis Farrakhan to provide security or inspiration. This is you. And if you want to get involved, I ask you to get involved, and you can hashtag life and spread the word. Talk to your kids, encourage them to hold each administration accountable and consistent, and let's effect change in this way. Schools should not be the hotbed of political marches. Kids should not be used for politics. Let's, if everybody would rise up and say, okay, we want to do this, the school is going to say, most likely, no, even if they wanted to do it, because they will realize, oh, crap, now we've opened a can of worms. But let's get them on record saying no more of these marches during school hours. That's a good thing to stand for.
And I'm just going to take it maybe one step further, because there are little other protests that we've had throughout the year, maybe where a student will show up and they don't talk for the day. It's called the Day of Silence. Or there's been other little things. I think Brandon is challenging school protests in general, whether it's a walkout or you're not going to talk for the day or what have you. Let's figure this out, please.
I think they're not going to talk for a day. If I was a teacher, I would have inspired that one. Hey, kids, let's do a not going to talk today walkout. Julianne, I have to tell you, we've talked to each other now three times. I can't believe I didn't know our connection to each other.
I know. Isn't it unbelievable?
Okay, so you want to talk about a small world and weird. Josh Charles, if you're a longtime listener and viewer of me, you know that when I was on Fox, I said offhand, somebody needs to write the Federalist Papers in today's language, the original argument. Somebody needs to write that so people can read it. Well, this kid, Josh Charles, he was in college and he was watching me and he was like, I can do that. And so he wrote it, and it became a book that we put out together called The Original Argument. In that, in the acknowledgement, I just saw this yesterday, to Julianne Benzel for being the absolute best kind of U.S. history teacher there is, one whose love of history and her students inspires all who know her to be passionate about learning and truth. I can't believe you're... You're really the person that inspired him to do that.
Well, as I was talking to your producer and Joshua and I were conversing over text, he said, hey, do you remember? And I'm like, oh, yeah. And then so I went and looked up the snapshotted a picture of the what you just wrote. Yeah. And I thought this is kind of crazy, because that's about 10 years, maybe even 15 years ago when I had Josh in class. And this all unfolded. And it's pretty fascinating.
Now I understand, too, the kind of teacher that you are, that when you said all of my old students called up to support me, you're one of those teachers that each of us have had at least one that is a pivot point in your life, is somebody who inspires you to go in and do your own homework and really challenges you every step of the way. Julianne, great to talk to you. Best
Thank
of luck,
so
and
much.
we'll check in next week when we hear from the principal in the school. Thank you so much. Hashtag life, by the way. Spread the word.
Notice you haven't brought up the scrunchie story today yet.
I'm good.
You haven't even addressed it.
I am going to. I love this story. Let me give you the headline. Ruth Bader Ginsburg ranks the best cities to buy scrunchies. Now, you want to say fake news? No, this is actual news. Fox News has defined this as news. It's almost better than the guy dressed as a bull trying to set a house on fire with spaghetti sauce, which I gave you in a minute ago. This one will give it to you here in just a second. First, let me tell you, if you are looking to buy or sell a home, you need a great real estate agent that is not going to give you a whole bunch of excuses, or not just put a sign in your front yard and then blow up some balloons on Saturday and say, hey, come on over, look at this house. I got another open house. I started realestateagentsitrust.com because of my frustration of trying to sell my home, because that is what always happened. I spent about a year trying to sell a home, and the real estate agent was like, we got another open house. And every week I would hear from my wife, don't mess up anything. Don't move that pillow. Don't move that. We have an open house this Saturday. And it was ridiculous. Well, I'm going to make some cookies. Yeah, don't make cookies. How about you sell the house? Real Estate Agents I Trust, They are the best in each city. We have 1,000 agents all across the country. They're the best at what they do. They're going to sell your home on time and for the most amount of money. They can also help you if you're relocating. You want to find an agent in the area. These guys go the extra mile. They're all fans of the show, so they all have the same kind of ethics, and they're going to welcome you into the community. So if you're looking to move, you're looking to buy, sell, whatever, realestateagentsitrust.com. Go there now. realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Glenn Beck.
Okay, so yes, the GOP budget. It's fantastic. It's truly fantastic. It spends more money than any year during the Obama administration. It puts us on track for a $38 trillion debt.
Exciting.
Oh my gosh, it's great. It's so great. And we'll get into that a little bit more next hour. But can we talk about the real news, please? Not all the fake news, but the real news. This is from Fox News today. Ruth Bader Ginsburg ranks the best cities to buy scrunchies.
The Supreme Court.
Supreme Court.
Justice.
While fashionistas everywhere champion the return of the scrunchie, I didn't know this was. Ruth Bader Ginsburg argues that they never went out of style.
Wow,
I've been wearing scrunchies for years, says the 85-year-old Supreme Court justice. My best scrunchies come from Zurich. The next best is London. And the third best city to buy scrunchies is Rome. She has served in the Supreme Court for nearly 25 years, is famed for accessorizing her black robes with lace collars, oversized glasses, and fishnet gloves. She says the fluffy circlet hair ties of the 80s and 90s have a special place in her heart. This, by the way, is not fake news. My scrunchie collection is not as large as my collar and glove collection, but scrunchies are catching up, the justice said. Both in and out of the courtroom, she's been known to fasten a low ponytail with a tried-and-true hairband in neutrals and metallic colors. For their part, scrunchies are back with a vengeance. Urban Outfitters reported had a 170% uptick of scrunchie sales. Nevertheless, opinion is mixed as to whether or not scrunchies are appropriate in the workplace.
Like the Supreme Court?
Some in the pro-scrunchie camp say they're gentler than elastics.
What? The pro-scrunchie camp?
Yeah. This is, by the way, a quote from the Wall Street Journal.
Oh.
Some in the pro-scrunchie camp say they're gentler than elastics and easy like sweatpants for your hair. Scrunchie haters, however, say there are sweatpants for your hair. The women that have been polled, however, were by and large fans of scrunchies. Okay, so there's a lot of things going on here. We have the Wall Street Journal and Fox News polling people about scrunchies. There is a pro-scrunchie camp and a hate scrunchie camp, apparently, in America. We found out that scrunchies are coming back in style. Who knew they were ever out of style? And we have Ruth Bader Ginsburg on record on fashion accessories. And not to be an elitist at all, where are the best places you can buy scrunchies? Some would say the mall. She went right for Zurich, London, and Rome.
You gotta love this. Fox News is doing some interesting stuff. How much time do we have here, Sarah? Do we have time for a little... Okay, here, Glenn, these are these news alerts. Listen, which one is Fox News? GOP senators recommend FBI probe. The Steele dossier explained. Teenager broke into Texas home, watched mom and daughter sleep, left behind stain.
Wait.
These are all actual Fox News alerts. Women sued by salon after posting photos of painful reaction to eyebrow tattoos. Police breakfast photo stirs controversy on Twitter. Opinion. I made a great discovery when I stopped staring at a woman on the beach.
what the hell? Well, there you have it. Stop staring at women on the beach and all the scrunchy news you could possibly ever want.
Glenn Beck Mercury.
Some of these online scams are getting so complicated I can't even understand them. Now, thieves are hacking online accounts at tax preparation firms and using them to file phony refunds. Then the IRS deposits money into the hacked clients' bank accounts, and then the crooks contact them, posing as collection agencies, claiming the refund was an error and demanding payment. Unfortunately, people are falling for it, and there's so many threats in today's connected world, it just takes one weak link for criminals to get in. Good thing new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security to help protect you against threats to your own identity and to devices that you can't easily see or fix on your own. If you have a problem, the agents will work to fix it. No one can stop all identity theft or every cyber threat or monitor transactions at all businesses, obviously. But new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover threats that you might otherwise miss. Go to LifeLock.com or 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use promo code BECK for an additional 10% off your first year. That's promo code BECK for an additional 10% off. It's LifeLock.com.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
A bunny named Marlon Bundo is the latest victim of attacks from the far left. They've gone nuts. Vice President Pence and his wife Karen have a black and white pet bunny rabbit named Marlon Bundo. Popular bunny, close to 23,000 followers on Instagram. And one of Pence's daughters, Charlotte, wrote a children's book that went on sale this week titled Marlon Bundo's Day in the Life of the Vice President. Now, I mean, we don't have to really spend any time about how exciting a day in the life of a vice president actually is, but the book is really well illustrated by Karen Pence, who's an accomplished watercolor painter. And in the book, Marlon Bundo narrates a tour of the White House and the vice president's house. It sounds harmless. It's a bunny rabbit. Kid fun. Portion of the proceeds being donated to a nonprofit that fights human trafficking and an art therapy program at a children's hospital. So the money's going to a good place. The book is completely non-political. But the bunny rabbit has been targeted by the radical left because Marlon Bundo's owner, his caretaker, Mike Pence, has committed the unpardonable sin of supporting the Religious Freedom Restoration Act when he was governor of Indiana, which was immediately spun as anti-gay, which it wasn't, and it branded Pence a bigot for life. So in the never-ending vengeance of the far left, now comedian John Oliver has joined the attack.
We also wrote a book about Mike Pence's rabbit that has also been published. In fact, while his is out tomorrow, ours is released right now. Now, there are a few small differences between the two books. You'll notice right away that our rabbit has a bow tie, so there's that. Also, our story is about Marlon Bundo falling in love with another boy rabbit because our Marlon Bundo is gay, just like the real Marlon Bundo. And let me be completely clear about this. This is actually a book for children. This is a real children's book. This isn't some adult book telling Mike Pence to go f*** himself. Although, in buying it, that's exactly what you would be doing.
Isn't that great? The villain in the book is a Mike Pence lookalike named Stinkbug who tries to stop gay marriage. On Monday, the fans of John Oliver spammed the real Marlon Bundo page on Amazon with one-star reviews and really crude comments. So why is the left mocking and cruel towards Mike Pence? I mean, when they hate Donald Trump with such intense passion, you would think that the button-up Pence would be their favorite Republican. The left hammers Trump 24/7 for all of his moral failures and then hammers Pence for being old-fashioned and square and remaining faithful to his wife. I just want the left to understand, if your dream comes true and you impeach Trump, you do know that Mike Pence becomes president, right? Oh, maybe that's why you're hammering him now, just setting the table to make sure that the whole world knows that he just might be worse than Donald Trump.
It's Thursday, March 22nd. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I had a fascinating night last night. We did a show that's going to be posted tonight for subscribers only on theblaze.com/TV. We had dinner last night with how many people, Stu? Was there? There was eight of us at the table, right?
Yes.
And they ranged from they were all, it was the island of misfit toys. There was a transgender man who was African American, or still is African American, and deeply Christian. There was a Marxist socialist kind of professor at the table. There was a deep Christian constitutional scholar. There was a really smart libertarian guitar player in a band. There was an African-American activist radio host and a refugee from Venezuela who could not stop talking about liberty and how important it is to pay attention to what your government is doing. It was amazing. Amazing. We got up afterwards and the socialist professor said to me, I have to tell you, that was the best discussion I think I've been engaged in a long time. While we all completely disagree with each other, that was fascinating to be able to have that talk in today's America. Thank you. It was truly remarkable, truly remarkable. When you just start treating people with respect, and we did, it got heated a couple of times. But we all walked away with respect for one another.
Yeah, it was kind of more of an experiment to just see if the earth would fold in upon itself if this event occurred.
Yeah.
And it did not.
It didn't. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you do not see on television. Everybody has an agenda. We had no agenda other than, I want to understand you. I want to understand you. And I want to understand what you're thinking. And it was quite remarkable. That doesn't happen everywhere. In fact, it's not happening really anywhere. Here in California, let me give you this story quickly. This is a story we're going to cover on tomorrow. There's a community here in the county of San Bernardino that has just told this cafe that they won't retain their business license because they're playing religious Christian music as Muzak. Now, the store owner says, look, yes, we do. We have easy listening music and contemporary Christian. Well, some atheists got together and said that that needed to be brought to the attention of the Department of Real Estate Services. I don't want to live in a state that has a Department of Real Estate Services. But a Department of Real Estate Services, the County of San Bernardino, they're going to put this cafe out of business. It is because it is located in the Superior Court building, and they say they can do it. The owners say this is religious bigotry. I think this is, quite honestly, the old progressive and hippie bigotry. There, I'm reading a book, Rock Gets Religion. It's by Mark Joseph, forward by Alice Cooper. Right towards the beginning, it talks about how the younger generation is more tolerant. Listen to this. The generational shift became apparent when Rolling Stone, a legend of the old guard of rock music criticism, refused to run an advertisement for a modern translation of the Bible in its magazine, though it violated no guidelines. Blender, on the other hand, representing a new and more tolerant generation of the music business, readily agreed to run the ad. The old guard of rock, schooled in the fires of battles between church and rock music, was given way now to a new group of rock executives, journalists, and radio programmers, though not necessarily supportive of the effort to blend Christian ideas into the mainstream music industry, aren't openly hostile as their forebears were. Mark Joseph is on with us now, the author of Rock and Religion. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hey, Glenn, great to be with you.
First of all, this is crazy. I know you live in California. This is crazy what is happening here. But when you started writing this about rock and religion, are you finding that there really is a trend of more tolerance at the lower end? Because that seems to run counterintuitive to what everything we're seeing on TV.
No, there is definitely a generational factor at work here. And, you know, in the book I talk about, rock and religion got off to a bad start in the 50s. You know, when rock and roll first started, the culture was inundating traditionalists at one time. There was the pill, there was rock and roll, it was the Beatles, it was the Stones, it was drugs. It was hard to know what was good and what wasn't. And I think many in the church overreacted and began to burn records and, you know, brand it the devil's music and all that. And some of the rock guys went along with the gag, like, okay, we'll pretend we're Satanists. They weren't all, very few were real Satanists, right? But they took the pose. And so you had this unnecessary, in my mind, battle going on. And really what the book is about is in the last, so what happened in response to that was when Christian people did try to make rock music, they were often told, hey, water it down a little bit, tone it down a little bit. The founders of Christian rock, Larry Norman, recorded a record for Capitol. And he wanted to call it, we need a lot more Jesus and a lot less rock and roll. And Capitol said, nah, call it I Love You instead. And so they did face some opposition, right? I Love You instead of that title.
Yeah.
So they did face opposition. But what the response, unfortunately, was to go off and create a separate genre called contemporary Christian music. And so for 20 or 30 years, CCM, it was as it was called, was kind of what I would call the Negro Baseball Leagues. It was amazing players. And as I researched that league, you know, Satchel Paige is an amazing player. But a lot of those players never got out of the Negro Baseball Leagues. And CCM was very similar. So you had a parallel musical universe going on for about 30 years. But I would say the last 5 to 10 years, that has changed. And most, a great deal of those artists have gone mainstream.
And you say it's because, a big part of it is because of American Idol.
That's right. American Idol is really significant, Glenn, because what happened was the pop and rock stars that you and I grew up listening to in the 70s, 80s, and even the 90s, generally those were picked by a half a dozen white guys in Hollywood. And let's just say they didn't have Glenn Beck's values, to keep it simple. to become a rock or pop star, you had to pass a certain test to get by those guys. And I have in the book an actual example of this happening where a guy who went on to become a major Christian pop star named Keith Green. Before he became a Christian pop star, he auditioned for Clive Davis in New York in 1977. He didn't pass the Clive Davis test, whatever it was. And so he was relegated to Christian music. And that happened over and over again. But however, when American Idol hits, it's really interesting because for the first time, it doesn't matter what a Clive Davis thinks about you. All that matters is what Hank in Cleveland and Susie in Tuscaloosa thinks about you. Because they were voting for our pop and rock stars. And so suddenly you have artists like Carrie Underwood and Chris Allen and dozens of artists who may not have passed the Clive Davis test.
So, when you think of rock and roll music, you do think of two things. The devil's music, you know, from the 1950s. Ah, he's shaking his hips. He's singing the devil's music. You think of that. You think of the counterculture groups, but then you also, if you bring Christianity into popular music, you think of those Christians like Miley Cyrus and others that have just gone horribly awry when they went and crossed over.
Right. Yeah, it's all in the book. The Miley Cyrus chapter is in the book. The Katy Perry chapter is in the book. So look, it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed story. But there's three other trends besides the American Idol. The second one is young artists, for instance, like the ones I mentioned, and even Justin Bieber, whose mother is a very devout Christian woman and raised him in the church and very pro-life. That's the kind of artist who in the past would have gone to Nashville and signed to a Christian music label. But no, he goes straight. His mother helps guide him straight to a mainstream label. The second, the other phenomenon is the Alice Cooper, who wrote the foreword to the book, as you talked about. So Alice Cooper comes back to his faith in the 1980s. And in the old days, here's what would have happened. He would have gone to his preacher, and his preacher would have said, well, Alice, time to go back to your given name of Vincent Furnier, cut your hair, and tour the country singing hymns at churches. Mm-hmm. And, of course, none of his old fans would have tagged along for that ride. But so Alice goes to his preacher and says, okay, what do I do now? And his preacher says to him, does God make mistakes? And Alice says, yeah, I don't think so. And says, well, he made you to be Alice Cooper, so go back out there and be the best, most godly Alice Cooper you can be. And so for the last 20 years, that's what we've had. We've had Alice Cooper essentially singing from a Christian point of view. He doesn't drink. He replaced his drinking with golf. And he's the same Alice Cooper. So that's also been huge. And then finally have been artists like Switchfoot and dozens of others who used to be in the contemporary Christian music industry who now are on mainstream labels and on your local radio station and playing at Starbucks.
So what do you think is, because at the same time that Christianity is getting such pushback and being, you know, pushed out of the public square, you say this is happening. Can you square the two?
Yeah. Look, the price of admission to this party is to drop the label. The label was off-putting to people. Try telling Alice Cooper or Dave Mustaine of Megadeth you have to step off the public square because you're a born-again Christian. Good luck with that, right? They've earned their place in the public square, and they can't be pushed out. I think the key is to really do good work. Sometimes, in the case of Christian music, that label was off-putting to people because it felt like it wasn't for the rest of, you know, people who weren't religious. And so I catalog dozens and dozens of artists who are in the mainstream, and people are sometimes aren't even aware. I have friends that have no idea about Alice Cooper and the change that he's undergone. And so is persecution, does it sometimes happen to people of faith? Of course, we've all heard stories from around the world throughout history. But I think the key is to do good work, to make the work so compelling that people will put up with some ideas they may not agree with because they love what you're doing.
The guy from Megadeth, because Natasha, who's a producer on our show, she's a big Megadeth fan. She said that there are some songs now that he just won't sing that he used to, but he's still doing it.
That's right. That's right. And he's it's an amazing story. He too had, you know, bouts with alcohol and drugs. And in the case of Alice, by the way, Alice, to my understanding, at least from what I've heard from him, he never really had to go through the 12-step program. He just, you know, slopped, put in golf where alcohol used to be.
Wow.
Dave's had a more interesting journey. But Prince had a similar journey. You know, he became a very devout Jehovah's Witness. And there were songs that he wouldn't play from his catalog as well. So that's part of, part of rock and roll is a youth thing. And eventually people grow up and their opinions change.
I have to tell you, Mark, it's a fascinating book. Rock Gets Religion, The Battle for the Soul of the Devil's Music. And I thank you so much for sharing it with us. God bless.
Thanks, Glenn. Thank you.
We should point out that Natasha, who's leaving us, is a big Alice Cooper fan, not a big Megadeth fan.
Oh, Alice Cooper
fan.
And
we can't let her leave the company.
No.
Sorry on that note.
And we have to talk about that, too, tomorrow. Anyway, Simply Safe. Simply Safe is this amazing company. I love these people because they're built from the same cloth. They are entrepreneurs. They want to change the world. They want to do something great. And they know if they change your life, it will change their life. And it just makes the world a better place. If a storm now takes out power, Simply Safe is ready to protect your home. If an intruder cuts your phone line, Simply Safe is ready to protect your home. If your cell phone or your Wi-Fi goes down, they got you covered. Now, some think that this might be a little overkill, that, you know, they've tested it against hammers and bats and everything else. They don't think so. Neither do I. When you need your alarm system to call the police, you need your alarm system to call the police. Simply Safe could cost an arm and a leg, but it doesn't. They charge you what is fair, what's right. 24/7 professional security monitoring is only $14.99 a month. And there's no contracts, there's no hidden fees. It's business done right. It's security done simply. Simply Safe. Go there now, check it out, check out the new system. Go to just scroll down on the front page and see how much money you're going to save just by doing something without a contract. You own the system, $14.99 a month. SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com. Protect your home and your family the easy way, the simple way. SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury.
Glenn Beck.
According to an official who is asked to remain anonymous because they're not authorized to speak to the press on this issue, there's a new directive already in place, and it's led to some difficult situation for civil servants up in Canada. It happens when they talk to people and say, what's the name of parent number one? And apparently people don't understand, what is parent number one? You mean mom or dad? What is parent number one? Some are very, very pleased to hear about the changes to the forms up in Canada, because people just don't fit into neat little boxes. But one MP and Treasury Board member said, yes, there are important issues for the government to concentrate on right now, but maybe one day our government is going to decide to cancel each and every Mother's Day or Father's Day, and we need to be able to prepare the people.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm so glad that we have the House and the Senate and the White House controlled by the GOP, because the only way we could get, seriously, the only way we could get spending like we got in the budget that they're passing now is if we had the GOP in and there was nothing to stop them or slow them down. I mean, we thought that that's what would happen with the Democrats. Well, we just got more spending than at any time during the Obama administration. And the good news is, we got our funding for the border, $1.3 billion for the funding, but none of it can be used for a border wall. They can build a chain link fence, but not a border wall.
So we'll keep some of our dogs in the country.
Yes,
which is good.
Yes, yeah. Welcome, Pat Gray to the extravaganza. Pat, I aren't you glad that now we can. We can get all of these things passed, like more money for IRS agents.
As Barack Obama might have said, well, at least it's not $130 trillion.
Yeah.
It's only $1.3 trillion. But it's not, 100 times that, which is really good.
It just puts us on track to have a debt of $38 trillion in 10 years.
Jim Jordan called it the worst bill since he's been in office.
Mo Brooks was on with us earlier today. He said the same thing. He said, I cannot overstate how bad this budget is. He said, this is a bankrupting budget.
Yeah, but is he an economist?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, actually, so. highest honors. Highest honors.
So, anyway, besides the budget, what's on your mind today?
The Twitter war between the president and Joe Biden. Actually, Joe Biden's wasn't on Twitter. He was speaking to groups of kids, and he told them that he would have beat the hell out of Trump if they attended high school together.
Hold it. So all the kids that we're supposed to be teaching that violence isn't the answer
and bullying
is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He just said that he would have beaten the hell out of the president.
Yeah. If they were back in high school, he would have taken him behind the school and beat the hell out of him.
Okay, good. That's a good message.
And it's a great message. And the president thought it was as well. So he responded early this morning while he probably got up, went to the bathroom, immediately started his thumbs working hard. He said, crazy Joe Biden is trying to act like a tough guy. Actually, he's weak, both mentally and physically, and yet he threatens me for the second time with physical assault. He doesn't know me, but he would go down fast and hard, crying all the way. Don't threaten people, Joe.
Now, wait a minute. Wait, I can't hold it. Let's hear the audio of Joe Biden in front of the kids yesterday.
When a guy who ended up becoming our national leader said, I can grab a woman anywhere and she likes it, and then said, I didn't make a mistake, but they asked me, would I like to debate this gentleman? And I said, no. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him. Locker rooms my whole life, a pretty damn good athlete.
Yeah.
Any guy who talked that way was usually the fattest, ugliest SOB in the room.
Yay! And insult their looks. That's perfect. So bullying and insulting people's physical appearance, both brilliant tactics from Joe Biden.
Okay, and so then the president responds equally as third grade.
Of course. Of course. But this one kind of felt good, you know, because I can't. Joe, middle class Joe, is doing this kind of stuff all the time.
Lunch bucket Joe's the best.
And so, you know, it didn't hit me as hard as it normally would from a, you know, president saying something like this. But then along came Jake Tapper, who kind of put the whole thing into perspective. Tapper tweeted out that, you know, these two tough guys had 9 Vietnam deferments between the two of them. And one was asthma and the other was bone spurs. So maybe they're not quite as tough as they're trying to make it out. And it's interesting with Tapper because, yeah, he went after both of them. He didn't just go after Trump. I like the fact that he treats both sides the same. And, you know, our side doesn't like that normally, but it's nice to have an actual journalist because that's what they're supposed to do, right? They're supposed to hold our elected officials' feet to the fire. And he does that on a pretty regular basis. Then he tweeted out, you know who is a tough guy from that generation? My father-in-law, Sergeant Tom Brown, enlisted in the U.S. Air Force in 1966, honorably discharged 1969, in country from 68 to 69 in the 12th Security Police Squadron Pacific Air Command. Isn't running around talking about how tough he is. Perspective.
What a braggart, you know?
you know, it's one of those things, too, where Tapper is very consistently pro our troops. I mean, he has backed them through very tough times when Democrats have taken shots at them. He's backed them. I mean, you know, you may not like his criticism of, Trump or whatever, but, you know, he's done it to both sides for a long time.
And not necessarily because he's pro, you know, war or pro, you know, this battle or that battle, just because I think he has perspective on it's not the troops' fault. It's just not the troops' fault. Thank you very much, Pat. We'll be looking for your extravaganza coming up in just a second. I just lost a
extravaganza.
It's incredible.
It's going to be especially extravagant today. So,
really? Yeah. What do you have coming up on the program today extravagant?
Well, we're going to have dancing elephants.
Really? Hang on just a second.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Oh my gosh.
And then I'm training lions in about an hour and a half. So watch for that.
And I've asked Pat to practice on the ribbons, and he's going to fly over the crowd tonight.
I'm going to have a safety net, however. We don't want a repeat of what happened.
No safety net
No
for
safety
you.
Net.
Yeah. Did you see that video of the Cirque du Soleil guy?
So disturbing.
So disturbing.
Oof.
And you know, so what does that mean? Do you put a safety net under,
I think so, right? I mean, it's America, so of course you either ban the activity or you put a safety net under them. That's how we work, right? Anytime anybody's hurt or killed doing something, that's what we do. We kind of overreact.
Well,
we don't want that to happen again.
No, have you gone to O? Have you guys been to O in Vegas?
I did see that one. That's the only one I think I've ever seen.
With the water?
Yeah, like a water. Oh, my God.
Holy cow. Cirque du Soleil is, I mean, it's amazing. I've seen them under the tent in Philadelphia. Did you go with us?
I've only been to
it was a small tent. This is before they became big. I saw them in a small tent, and it was wild in a small tent. You know, I've seen them all over the country. I went to see O. O is it's all water. And the floor continues to open up and then close, and the depth of the pool can go up and down. And so you never know how deep the water is because it changes all the time.
Like you'll see someone, you'll see someone kind of like on the, it looks like they're walking on the water. And then 5 seconds later,
they'll be
in another spot, and a person will dive from like a high dive right to the spot where the person just was standing. So it looks like he's going to crash right into the ground. But of course, the floor is always altering.
It's always changing. And so you never know.
Yeah.
And there are, I can't remember how many trips there are, how many safety triggers there are in this thing. It's like 9,000 safety points that the show has to stop at, and it has to tick it off, and it has to be cleared like 9,000 times every single performance. It's nuts. And these guys will be up three stories, and they dive down into a pool, and this pool is deep enough, but it's very narrow. You got to hit it right. And it's terrifying to watch. Terrifying. But, these guys choose to do it every night.
Yeah. I won't be doing any of that, but I do have Lippinser Stallions coming up in about 15
really?
Minutes.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why are they? I know you're an expert. Why are they called Lippinser?
Because they're from Lippens. The island of Lippens. Which we're all familiar with, of course.
I hope that wasn't a spoiler alert for your show. Was that a big thing you were going to explain?
No, I already revealed that about 3 weeks ago.
Are you running pictures of the island of Lippens?
No.
And is it close to the island of Misfit Toys?
I don't want too many people to visit because there's danger that it could tip over and capsize.
Okay. Well, I hear, and I don't know if this is true, but I hear those horses, they were kept secret. That's the same island where Gilligan and the professor and the Marianne and the others
wound up on their 3-hour tour.
Right. Which landed
a little fact of Lippens.
Yeah, a lot longer than 3 hours. So anyway, right. Thanks a lot.
See ya.
Appreciate it. Pat Gray and his orchestra in about 15 minutes. All right, let me tell you about ZipRecruiter. You're looking to hire? You need to hire somebody that is perfect for your industry. You need to hire the person that is going to help you charge forward and change the fortunes of your company. I mean, unless you're doing well. Change the fortunes of your company and bring you to that next level. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to do it. ZipRecruiter built a platform that goes out, not only just they post to the 100-plus job sites, but they find the right job candidate for you. They learn what you're looking for, then it goes out and identifies the right people with the right experience, invites them to apply, and then when they come in, when they do apply, it highlights the best candidates because it's learned what you're looking for. It highlights the best candidates. So if you're just looking through a stack of resumes, it doesn't overwhelm you. They're like, you've got to see this one. You really have to see this one. ZipRecruiter, it's how you find the best people. Find out today why ZipRecruiter's been used by businesses of all sizes and industries and find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, post your job on ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. Glad you're here. What have we missed, Stu? What have we not hit today that we needed to?
I just want to make sure we've been going through a lot of the budget stuff, and sometimes we have been pessimistic about what our spending future is, and but we want to make sure that the important things are funded. And President Trump had threatened to make massive cuts to the EPA budget. This is according to the Washington Examiner. But Congress decided to keep those funding levels
the
same.
You've got to be kidding me. That's in the budget?
Yeah, no cuts on that. We still get the $8.1 billion.
Unfreaking believable.
So that's good.
So wait.
It's amazing.
So does that undo a lot of the stuff that he did?
A lot of stuff. Trump has done a lot of really good things with the EPA when it comes to regulation. Scott Pruitt was a really good appointment, I think, and they've done a really good job on that sort of executive side when it comes to environmental stuff. I've been very pleased with it, as I've kind of gone over multiple times here. But that's the problem with these big bills, separate from all of the stuff that we could talk about. Trump really does support cutting these this budget. Like, this is actually something he's pretty good on. And, you know, but again, it's a giant bill, and they just, well, we have to get X, Y, and Z done, so we have to agree to A, B, and C.
I'm really torn on this because Donald Trump has said that he's a big budget guy. He's a big debt guy. He doesn't mind debt. Well, I do. But in this particular case, it looks like they're giving him more than what his budget asked for. And he asked for a lot. I mean, remember when he laid out the State of the Union and we were like, are you kidding me? All of this spending? No. The Republicans gave him more.
More spending to whoever likes spending. They gave more spending than any year of the entire Obama administration. You have a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican presidency, and the spending levels you're getting are higher on the discretionary side where they can make the choices. The spending is higher than any individual year the entire Obama administration. Do you remember how upset we were at the spending? I mean, again, this is not a criticism of one person. It's a criticism of, I guess, Washington in general, and the fact that the Republican Party is largely worthless. Let's be honest about it. What do they do? This is complete
Nothing.
Waste of our time.
Nothing.
To go out there and campaign for these people and vote for them. If you go out there and you dedicate your time, a lot of people in this audience have sent their hard-earned money to support these candidates who then go in there and vote for higher spending levels than Barack Obama.
It is really important. Do not give your money to the GOP. Don't give your money to the GOP. Give it to individual candidates. Because those individual candidates, they're most likely, if they're like you, they've been cut off from the funding from the GOP. The GOP is not supporting them. We need to support those people because most of them are getting cut off by the Mitch McConnells of the world.
And there is a group of Republicans that are supposed to vote against this, it looks like. It's not finalized yet. Justin Amash, Davidson from Ohio, Gohmert from Texas, Jordan, Ohio, Mooney, West Virginia, Posey, Florida, Yoho, Florida, Biggs, Arizona, Duncan, Tennessee, Griffith, Virginia, Labrador, Idaho, Norman, Sanford from South Carolina, Blum.
He's turned into good, hasn't he?
Mark Sanford, yeah.
Yeah.
He's been solid. He's been on the show a few times as well. But he's been his comeback has been better than his first act, I would say.
Yeah.
Garrett, Harris, Massey, Pierce, Brooks. Let's see, Meadows. A couple of other names you're gonna know. I mean, there's a pretty solid. I mean, they're saying about 25 are gonna vote against it. It's not gonna be enough to stop it, though. That's the important.
You
part.
Need to call your House of Representative and your senator. And tell them to pass the Mo Brooks bill, which stops the government shutdown. If they can't come together and produce a real budget, then the government doesn't shut down. The levels just stay exactly the same.
Mercury.